Now we are joined by a senior writer for, or an NBA writer for SI, an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston, a boxing analyst for DAZN, and the host of the Crossover Podcast, SI Boxing with Chris Mannix, and Inside the Paint on SI TV. Obviously a very good friend of the program. He is back for more. Chris Mannix is my guest. Chris, great to have you. Thanks so much. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How are you doing?
Good, bud. Good. Got to get your initial reaction. When the Anthony Davis trade was reported on Saturday, what was the first thing that went through your mind?
Well, I guess I'd want to hear what the Pelicans got out of it. I had been writing for a while now that Anthony Davis to basketball was the equivalent of Herschel Walker to football. Like, it needed to be and would be the biggest and most significant trade in NBA history. And as things started to leak out, specifically when it came to the draft considerations, you could see that it was that. I mean, the Pelicans, with the control they have over the Lakers picks, at least through 2024, if not longer, that's significant right there. And look, the Lakers, they had to do this deal, Jim, because they put themselves on the LeBron James timeline, but they gave up a lot, and the Pelicans have a good chance of rebuilding this thing into a sustainable winner very quickly.
Chris Mannix joining us. I agree with you, Chris. They had to. I mean, they had no choice. They had to do that. I also agree they did give up a lot. In your opinion, did they give up too much?
I mean, look, we can Monday morning quarterback it for sure. The Lakers, they had to know that the field, you know, they were competing with wasn't all that significant. I mean, Boston was out there, but the Kyrie Irving situation had the Celtics pulling their punches when it came to making an offer to the Pelicans. Certainly, recent history has shown that a team we're not talking about in the same way that Oklahoma City was with Paul George and Toronto was with Kawhi Leonard could have emerged, but the Lakers had to have this guy. I mean, they did. And look, we'll see what happens in 2023 when LeBron's in his very late 30s, if he's playing for the Lakers at all. They'll hope that Anthony Davis's body holds up over the next 5 or 6 years of his next contract. But, again, it comes down to they had to make this deal. They had to get this guy, and now it's all about building around him.
We are talking to Chris Mannix. All right, so what about that? What about fit? How do you see LeBron and Davis working together on the floor?
Oh, I think they're a great fit stylistically. I mean, you've got two guys that are extremely versatile offensively. Davis in the last 2 years has really developed his offensive game to include the three-point shot. Now, this year, his numbers dipped a little bit, but this was a very strange year from start to finish. So I think you can toss those out. So he's right around a 34-35% three-point shooter, a number that, you know, when you talk to the coaches in New Orleans over the years, they figure it's only going to improve. So you not only have a guy that is lethal off the dribble against, you know, bigger and more plodding centers, but now he can step out, be a floor spacer, and that's just what LeBron needs. You know, he didn't have it last year in Los Angeles. Davis provides that type of option. And look, defensively, Davis can swing between two positions. He can play kind of a quasi-small ball front court with LeBron at the four. I just think the Lakers are going to be able to trot out a bunch of different lineups that are effective in different ways.
Chris Mannix joining us. And then, Chris, they were able to hold on to Kyle Kuzma. So what about that fit of LeBron, AD, and Kuzma in the front court? Does that work for you?
I think it works. You know, defensively, they're going to have to figure some things out. But when you have a guy like Kuzma that can step in and play multiple positions at times last year, he was kind of a small ball center for the Lakers with that group. I think they've got a chance to be really dynamic offensively. But it all comes down to, Jim, how they fill this roster out. I mean, we saw with the Toronto Raptors, they had their superstar in Kawhi Leonard. They had a second star in Kyle Lowry. But they are champions because they identified Pascal Siakam, and they picked up Fred VanVleet off the scrap heap, and they made a deal for Marc Gasol at midseason. This is where Rob Pelinka's hard work comes in. It was easy, but you know, he gave up the store to go get Anthony Davis, and that's the easier part of this deal. The second part of building a contender is going to be using second-round picks, free agent acquisitions, small deals. He's got to find a way to build the roster out around these two players.
So bottom line that for me, Chris, is the move to spread the money around and try to collect shooters in depth, or do you try to take that big swing and go after somebody like Kemba Walker?
First, I don't think they're going to have the cap space to make a move on Kemba unless they make another deal to free some space. I mean, you probably talked about the logistics of it. If it happens July 30th, maybe They have the cap space, but the Pelicans have no reason to help the Lakers with anything anymore. I mean, they are in the business now of the Lakers being bad. So I think they're going to execute this deal on July 26th or July 6th, and that's going to limit the cap space even more. I would spread it out. I would look at guys like J.J. Redick. I would look at a restricted free agent like Malcolm Brogdon. I would look for shooters out there to surround with these guys. I mean, last year was a joke. I mean, the players they put around LeBron, it never made any sense. You know, follow the blueprint that Miami created and that Cleveland took to another level. Put shooters around this guy. Put shooters around Anthony Davis. Force one-on-one defenses. And watch this team shine offensively. I think that's got to be Rob Pelinka's priority.
We are talking to Chris Mannix. Listen, I hear exactly what you're saying. You need to see more. You need to see what they do and who they surround these two guys with. But given the move and given the situation that the Warriors find themselves in right now, I mean, is it too soon to say, or where would you rank the Lakers among contenders in the West?
I'd put them in the middle of the pack right now until we see what it is they do next. Chemistry and continuity is key. I mean, the Rockets, I mean, they're kind of dysfunctional right now, but on paper, I would think the Rockets are the favorite to come out of the West. I mean, they've been to, you know, close to the mountaintop before. Unless they make a deal, most of their guys are coming back. I mean, they're a really good team, and if they can figure this Mike D'Antoni stuff out, I think they've got a chance to be the heir to Golden State. I think Denver's only going to get better. I think Portland's got a chance with Nurkic coming back to get better. I think the Lakers, while they have the foundation for a really good team, I'm just going to wait and see. And see what pieces they add around these two players before I crown them favorites in the West.
And you mentioned, Chris, that they've got to figure out this Mike D'Antoni stuff. ESPN's got a report right now that there might be some internal issues with the Rockets. Do they also, in your opinion, have to figure out some Chris Paul stuff too?
You do, and it's more internal, but I don't know what the market is for Chris Paul. I mean, when they signed him to that contract, that's going to pay him like $40 million or whatever it is on the back end of that deal when he's in his late 30s. They knew they were kind of making their deal with the devil, so to speak. Like, this was, they were paying for two, maybe three high-level years of Chris Paul and then dealing with whatever comes afterwards. So I don't know what the market is for Chris Paul at that kind of contract number and at this stage of his career. If there really is friction between Chris and James Harden, they've got to deal with that internally. And I think it starts with, you know, getting Mike D'Antoni on board for multiple years. He doesn't have a staff right now, Jim. And there's no coach that has other options that is going to join with Mike D'Antoni, who is effectively a lame duck. You're going to have to go with kind of retreads and guys that don't have any other options that are out there, who might take a one-year deal to work on D'Antoni's staff. So if I'm the Rockets, everything I'm doing to improve begins with the internal stuff.
We are talking to Chris Mannix. All right, Chris, back to Lakers for a minute. What is the fact that Anthony Davis is going to Los Angeles say about Rich Paul?
Well, he's effective. He just is. I mean, it goes back to some of the other things he's done with the Cavaliers and the guys he had on that roster with Eric Bledsoe when he wanted him to get out of Phoenix. It's a bit, I'm not sure what the word is, but it's unseemly to a degree how they handled the Davis stuff, because they effectively sabotaged what was left of the Pelican season. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's where he wanted to be. And he's where Anthony Davis claimed to want to be. So I think the ends justify the means when it comes to Rich Paul. Now, I do think that there's a lot of power he wields within the organization, especially when it comes to how the coaching staff shakes out. And certainly, you know, as you fill out the roster, don't be surprised to see another Rich Paul client wind up there. But that's not unusual. Like, agents have wielded power in organizations before. David Falk did it when he had Michael Jordan and Patrick Ewing. Dan Fagan did it with a couple of different organizations in his time as an agent. It's not strange to see agents have this kind of influence. What Rich Paul is doing, though, is doing it in a little bit of an unorthodox way.
We are talking to Chris Mannix. All right, so everybody had a few moments to think about this deal now, and he goes to the Lakers. The focus then shifted back to the Celtics. Boston was thought to be the team that might have an even better package for him. What happened with Boston?
Well, they know Kyrie's gone, and because of that, they're not willing to mortgage their future on the chance that Anthony Davis signs up with them long term. The deal they made with Kyrie a couple of years ago, it didn't really cost them much. I mean, it cost them Isaiah Thomas, who was coming off an all NBA season, but Isaiah barely played for the Cavaliers and hasn't been the same player since because of that hip. It cost them a lottery pick, but it didn't turn out to be the top three pick the Cavs thought they were getting. Instead, it was eight, which turned into Colin Sexton. So the Celtics, you know, when Irving eventually walks in a couple of weeks, it's not like they lost a ton on that particular deal. If they traded for Davis, they would have. They would have had to trade a Jason Tatum. They would have had to include most or all of their draft picks. And I don't blame the Celtics or Danny Ainge for not wanting to go all in on that situation. The Celtics, even though they're getting kind of pilloried right now for everything sort of not working out, which is a little bit strange to me, seeing how much people are jumping on them, they're still a really good team. I mean, the core of this team that went to a conference finals just last year is intact. And Terry Rozier has to be rehabilitated to a degree, but he can come back. He's a restricted free agent. They'll add Gordon Hayward, who's only going to be better next year, a year removed from his first season after the injury. He's going to be better. I think the Celtics are still a top four team in the Eastern Conference. And with the teams that are above them facing so many problems, I mean, Toronto, they could lose Kawhi. Philly has two huge free agents in Harrison Butler. The Bucks have Chris Middleton and Malcolm Brogdon, not to mention Brook Lopez and some other ancillary pieces. I don't know that the Celtics are out of this yet. Plus, I think they're going to make another move because they don't want to use all their draft picks. I think they'll flesh out the roster with somebody before the start of the season.
We're talking to Chris Mannix, and we'll do so for a few more moments. So, Chris, meanwhile, when all this is going on, the Raptors were having their parade, and as you and I talked about earlier this season, the Clippers had been shadowing Kawhi Leonard pretty much all season long. How much does winning a title in Toronto impact Kawhi's decision?
You know, it's a great question, and I wish I had the answer. I don't think anybody really knows.
Right.
I mean, I think that a lot of people around the league, including the Clippers, believe they're the favorite to land him. They have been doing that kind of shadow recruiting. But Kawhi is his own man and has a very, very small inner circle. And one thing the Raptors, some of their executives told me over the last few weeks, was that they hope that moments influence Kawhi Leonard. And moments are like what we saw in Game 7 against Philly, where he knocks down that shot on the Toronto home floor. Moments like winning the conference finals in Toronto. Moments like winning a championship. I'm skeptical that Kawhi would ever lock himself up to a five-year deal with the Toronto Raptors. But if he was going to go back to Toronto, a short-term deal may be possible. I still think the Clippers are the team that is in the pole position here. But going back to Toronto on a short-term deal where you maximize whatever's left of Kyle Lowry, whatever's left of Marc Gasol, and give Masai Ujiri a chance to add even more talent to the roster, I think that's plausible. I think the Raptors are in a tough spot, but I think it's possible.
And then finally, what about Golden State? What do they look like next year?
I think they look like Steph Curry and whoever else can get to play for him. I don't think Durant's back. I think he's still going to wind up on one of the New York teams. But even if he was, he's not playing next year. Klay Thompson probably won't be back until March, and they may elect to just punt on the season for Klay as well, just to protect him for 2020. The big question I think the Warriors have to answer next year is, what do you do with Draymond Green? I mean, Draymond Green, the heart and soul of that team, no question, but he's somebody that is going to be a free agent in 2020. And if he is, do you really want to max him out in 2020? Or do you look to deal him and get 60-75% on the dollar for guys that could be part of what you do long-term with Steph and Klay? I think that's going to be a decision that Bob Myers, Joe Lake of Met front office really have to think about.
He is an NBA writer for Sports Illustrated, an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston, a boxing analyst for DAZN, and host of the Crossover podcast, SI Boxing with Chris Mannix, and Inside the Paint on SI TV. Man, the resume gets longer and longer. Chris, great job. Really appreciate you, and nice to have you back. Really appreciate it.
Anytime, Jim. Anytime.
Nice job. Chris, well done. I'll say it again. Man, I'm proud of my guy, Chris Mannix. He is killing it.